Chris Ranji, Amy Markscore is with you on a Monday morning. And St. Louis County voters will decide the fate of the Prop U use tax. It will be on the August 4th ballot. And if you've been so caught up in Amendment 4 and Amendment 5 that you're thinking, wait, what's Prop U? And yes, this is for St. Louis County. You'll want to listen up because we have Kate Thompson on the line on the Quiver River Electric guest line. She is the Advocacy Committee Chair for the St. Louis Realtors, and I think she's going to suss out Prop U for us so we know exactly what's going on. Kate, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
I know it's not the sexiest thing on the ballot, but for people who are wondering, what is a use tax, the Prop U use tax, kind of set the table on what it is.
So this particular tax is really not a new tax. It is basically a tax that is about fairness to our local businesses, specifically our mom and pop little boutique stores, everywhere we have them, all over the metropolitan St. Louis County area. So if you were today to buy something at that boutique store, you're charged a tax. If you were to find that same product online, you are not charged necessarily the St. Louis County tax there. So automatically, our mom and pops are at a bit of a disadvantage. And they're our neighbors. They employ our neighbors. And they also, you know, commit dollars and presence to our metropolitan area. So what this does is it applies the same amount of tax on your online purchase so that St. Louis County can recoup those dollars and use those for services like roads, your park system, and it helps prevent future taxes, or I should say increases on property taxes for these very same things.
What is, you are with the St. Louis Realtors. What is their particular interest in this?
So we represent both residential and commercial real estate and realtors. And so it is very important to our commercial partners, but also for our communities. So, you know, we are the ambassadors of our communities and we sell St. Louis one yard at a time, and that's in various communities. And so to really keep those communities whole, our mom and pop shops are hugely important for that. And so for our commercial folks and for just the municipalities in general, it's really important to keep them at a level playing field with these online retailers.
So at least 45 municipalities in the county already have a use tax on the books. So just to clarify, this is just for the remaining counties that don't?
Correct. Your unincorporated St. Louis County areas. That is correct.
Some of the major areas where people are already paying this use tax online, what would those municipalities be? Just to throw them out for people who are out in those listening areas.
So unincorporated St. Louis County actually covers quite a bit of territory.
Okay.
And not all the municipalities actually have their own use tax. So unfortunately, I can't give you a comprehensive list of who that might be. Just know that it's not, if the use tax is already in place in other municipalities, it would not add to that at all. It's where they aren't today.
So what is the objection to it that you are hearing? Obviously, you are in favor of it. The group you represent is in favor of it. So what sort of pushback are you hearing?
Well, whenever you say to somebody a tax, and they equate that to a tax period, and they think that it's a new tax. And so it's really the same rate that you're paying today if you were to go into a brick and mortar store. It's just online.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people don't understand it. And the term use tax is not self-defining.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that, I think that adds a level of confusion.
So obviously when a tax does come about, I mean, people have an aversion to it. Generally speaking, nobody wants to pay a tax. I mean, nobody, if we could live life and live in a society and never pay any taxes ever, that'd be great. It just isn't realistic. But the second question is, where's the money going to go? Is your interest more in just making it fair for the local businesses and not so much concern about what the tax money does once it's acquired?
It's both. So, of course, we are greatly concerned about protecting the interests of the small business and also the communities that they serve. But where these monies will actually go to when it comes to road maintenance, we all need road maintenance. You know, the parks that you enjoy, I just heard on your news about how you can't go and get your pictures done because the deer ate all the sunflowers. So, you know, the money that it takes to maintain our park system, our road systems, all of these things, that comes from these types of taxes. And with actually enacting this type of tax, it can in the future help with maintaining property taxes, because this is an additional revenue flow that St. Louis County does not have today.
You know, we talked about the municipalities that already have this use tax, and you know, some examples, you know, Brentwood, Clayton, Crestwood, De Pere, Kirkwood, U City, Maplewood, some of these areas. And I believe it was actually Creve Coeur that voted yes to have a use tax in 2025. And one of the big questions that they asked people for this vote in Creve Coeur was, will it be a double tax? And they said, no, the purchaser pays either a sales tax or a use tax, but never both.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
So just to make that clear, yeah.
Yes, it is not both. And the use tax specifically goes towards online purchases. It's not if you're buying in the brick and mortar.
Right.
And so, Kate, you mentioned the property tax, and people are concerned about their property taxes going up. Is it that there would be some relief on property taxes as a result of this tax being implemented, or just a guarantee that they wouldn't go up? That this is a way to prevent them from going up from what they are now?
I can make no guarantee in reference to taxes. I am a lowly little realtor, my friends. Okay. I am not a politician, and I don't pretend to be one. So here's what I can tell you is that today it is a revenue stream that St. Louis County is missing out on. And as a result of that, your property tax, the way it is structured today, is the what carries those services that we just talked about. This is another revenue stream to allow for St. Louis County to capture those dollars to put towards the services that we all need, that we need good roads, we need good park spaces, all of these things that the county dollars pay for today. These are going untapped without this use tax.
Kate, thank you so much for giving us your time today. Again, the vote is August 4th. This is Prop U. Kate Thompson, Advocacy Committee Chair for St. Louis Realtors. We appreciate your time. Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
And that same August 4th ballot, that is, Amendments 4, Amendment 5, all that vote. All those votes are happening at the same time.
Different primaries.
And
as Hancock and Kelly say, in a lot of areas, the primary is the real election.
Yeah.
Because if it's very red or very blue, you know who's going to win from the primary, basically. I will say this quickly. Having worked at a locally owned store for several years, I get it that if you sometimes go to a boutique or a family-owned store, yeah, you might pay more than you would pay on Amazon or something like that. And so, but one thing that you can offer is personal knowledge, personal investment in the items that you're selling, saying, this is a really good item. I use this. Like, I worked at a running store, and I could say, I've run thousands of miles in this shoe, or like this water bottle, like really niche stuff, right? Say, oh, I've used this water bottle in this weather or that weather. And you get that experience. And sometimes I swear I had spent an hour with a customer sometimes, because it was very boutique. It was very niche. And they'd say, this is awesome. And then they would write it down and say, but yeah, I don't have to pay tax if I like buy this online, you know, with the use tax, or I can get it cheaper somewhere else. And I know it just varies. And like I said, we understand people trying to save money. I mean, I get it, but it is tough if you're Amazon has already made small business so much tougher, because people just, they just go and they can buy things for cheaper, and it's hard for a family-owned business to compete with that. But
Amazon and some of the larger stores, you know, the big box stores, the Walmart types, it does make it more difficult.
So, and I get it, but yeah, anyway, it's tough.
We do have reason to bring back one of our most popular segments.
What?
The Egg Beat.
Oh,
the Egg Beat returns. We got a new story for you. That's coming up next on KMOX. Well, Amy, it's back. Due to popular demand, And also, there's this, there's an illness going around. We bring you again the egg beat.
Oh, no. The egg beat?
Yeah, the egg beat is back. It's been a while. Remember when inflation and all we talked about was the price of eggs? We had to have an egg beat segment every day. That's all anybody cared about was how expensive eggs were.
Yeah.
Well, a salmonella outbreak has tied eggs to sickening 98 people in 17 states going back to November. So that is what has been reported. Just before the weekend, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration says that between November 21st and June 30th, these illnesses occurred. No deaths, however, have been reported. 26 people have gone to the hospital as a result. The eggs were recalled by Midwest Poultry Services. It's an Indiana-based company.
Are we one of the
But it does not. It does not account for all of the illnesses.
Are we one of the 17 states?
Are we one of the 17 states?
That seems to be like the key question.
They didn't.
This story
did not put the states.
That feels like the one of the more important facts.
Well, they did put out a photo of the egg cartons that were being
Are they free recalled.
Range? Large grade A eggs. No, they do not appear to be free range.
So is the salmonella in the eggs or is it on the shells and you're getting it from the shells?
What are you asking me for?
Is this an AI? How did this reporter ask zero questions?
I don't know.
This is the reporter, and we have a salmonella outbreak, got 98 people sick. Okay, thanks, Bob. That's the end of the story. What are the companies? What states? Is it from the egg itself? Like, even if you scramble the eggs, you're going to get it? Or is it on the shell, and you touched it, and then you ate without washing your hands? Because I do know the shells can be dirty.
Yeah, you got to clean the shells.
Sometimes.
You don't have to. I think we're okay, though, because it appears to have gone to a Kroger.
Oh, yeah, we don't have Kroger.
There's a different story.
Well, hold on. Can I just say this in case you're wondering if you're starting to feel empathy illness? Salmonella symptoms include diarrhea, fever, and stomach cramps. They usually start 6 hours to 6 days. That's not fair. After you eat contaminated food and last 4 to 7 days. So it does sound not quite as severe as the 2 weeks of explosive diarrhea that you get with cyclospora.
Well, here you go. The information you were looking for.
Thank you.
Of the 98 salmonella cases, they have been reported in Illinois and Missouri.
Oh, my gosh.
Arizona, California, Colorado, Georgia, Illinois, Louisiana, Michigan, Missouri, Mississippi, blah, blah, blah. So, yes, Illinois and Missouri. And it looks like Kroger large eggs in cartons of 12, 18, and 60... Simple Truth cage-free medium brown eggs.
Oh.
Brookshire's large eggs. And Country Morning large eggs. So, be very careful if you're going to eat your eggs.
Would you be more afraid of a cyclospora contamination, like you get that with explosive diarrhea? Or what if cyclospora caused severe gum disease? That sounds worse, doesn't it?
Where did you get that?
I don't know. I was just thinking of things that I'm afraid of.
Yeah, I don't think you want severe gum disease.
I'm more afraid of severe gum disease than I am of diarrhea. I have a lot of experience with diarrhea.
I'm more afraid of cancer. Okay. Okay. You just want to keep going up the ladder? What? All right, Amy.
What?
So we have a large pile of dirt.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know if you heard about this, but
it's in my neighborhood.
Mount Soulard.
Yeah, Mount Soulard.
It is at least 20 feet high. I mean, you can drive up it. There is a developer, and I'm going to say the name because they deserve to be outed. It's officially JLN Soulard Properties LLC, which is Joseph and Leonard Adewunmi of St. Louis-based DNR Building Group. So DNR Building Group and JLN Soulard Properties LLC are dumping dirt on a corner in Soulard. It's located at 7th Street and Shenandoah Avenue. And it is such an eyesore. I mean, it looks like a mini landfill. This mountain of dirt is growing and growing. And the city has fined JLN Soulard Properties, owned by D&R Building Group, has fined them, and the company says, okay, we'll pay the fine, and we'll keep dumping our dirt here, ruining the neighborhood, because apparently it is cheaper and easier to just pay a city fine and dump it in Soulard than to, you know, find an actual place to dump dirt from a development. But, Matt, you saw this when we went to Dee's place in Soulard. And remember how last week I wanted to move to the Central West End in Midtown because it was so awesome? Well, this weekend, and now I want to move to Soulard because I got the Soulard experience and driving the golf cart around the cobblestone streets and going to the farmer's market in Dee's place was so much fun. And then these idiots are trying to ruin everything.
Yeah, it was huge. Like, the best way you described it was it's like a mini dump. And it's on, like,
it's a main street.
Main street. 7th
and Shenandoah.
You drive by to get to, you know, bars and stuff like that. And just, it looks like a construction site. It pretty much is.
Like, I mean, the audacity of these people. JLN is not based here, correct?
I believe it is, because it's D&R. Because a lot of their projects, they've done projects around St. Louis.
Okay.
But I'm on the D&R website. They have a section called Safety First. Through ongoing training, strict safety protocols, and protective risk management, we strive to create a culture where safety is everyone's responsibility.
Well, I
believe it. D&R Buildings and JLN Soulard Properties, LLC, worst companies. It's actually very dangerous because, as you mentioned, this mound of dirt, they're calling it Mount Soulard right now. And, you know, with floods and rain, I mean, you can create an unsafe situation. You can also create a mess with the sewers, like all of this mud and everything just dumping into the streets. It's a real eyesore.
For stuff like that, there should just be the ability on the part of the city to really go after a company.
Arrest the guy until he fixes the situation.
I agree with you. Because these people do this crap, and they're like, well, I don't live there. It's not my problem. Just go dump it somewhere else.
We keep paying the fine. What are you going to do about it?
Nah, man. Throw this guy in jail.
Yeah,
I there should be much, much stiffer penalties, and cities should have the ability to really, really punish somebody like this. Or, you know, it's the same sort of thing as this Millennium Hotel situation from years ago, which finally is being dealt with properly. But derelict business owners and building owners that allow in heavily populated areas, they allow their buildings to crumble and do nothing about it because they don't live there. Because they don't live in those neighborhoods, so they don't care.
No, they don't care, but this is wild because, like I said, D&R Building Group is St. Louis based. So it's their own city. And it says trucks began dumping dirt on the property in April. The mound reached 20 feet in height last week. And Ward 8 Alderwoman Jamie Cox Antwi said that the city had previously fined the developer, like we mentioned, multiple times, but they just pay the fine and keep dumping. And so now the city has condemned the site. There's a sign there that says the site's condemned, fine, and that the property owner could be fined up to $500 a day if the dirt is not removed by July 29th. Are they just going to eat the money and keep it there? I mean,
probably.
Something feels like, can you park somebody there to stop the truck? The next truck that comes and said no.
Here's what I would suggest. If there is a business, you know, like an actual building where this company exists, load up as much of that dirt as you can, drive it over there, and then dump it on their front doorstep.
Put it back. Bring it back. Yep. Say, I believe you forgot this.
I'm not saying you should do it. I'm just saying if it happened, then that's what happens.
Unbelievable. It's really a shame. It's such a great neighborhood. And then company decides we're just going to dump dirt.
It would be a real shame if somebody found where JLN is and just dumped all of their dirt back onto their property for them.
I don't know why it says based D&R building is based in St. Louis, and a texter says JLN
is in Connecticut.
Yeah, but the story says D&R. I don't know. This is very confusing.
It's probably intentionally confusing, so you can't find out where they are.
There's a reason that JLN doesn't have a website. What legit company doesn't have a website? I have a website.
Cardinals are not playing particularly well. They had a rough one over the weekend. They have not been doing well since last week, and we are going to talk it over with Matt Pauley as they open up a series against the Cubs at Busch Stadium tonight. Matt Pauley, host of Sports Open Line, joins us next on 104.1 FM KMOX.
The pitch on the way, a swing, and there's a high fly ball that's hit into left center field, playable, and the catch is made by Blade, and this ball game has come to an end.
Yo, Pauley!
Pauley's a great name.
Yo, Pauley!
What'd you do for Pauley? Anything?
Me, Pauley! I was responsible!
Pauley, we're here because of you!
Well, the Cardinals are in a bit of a slide right now. They have lost 8 of 11 games they have played since coming out of the All-Star break. And, it's not been very good.
And I will just add, as someone who predicted that the Cardinals will win 93 games this year, the Cardinals are going to have to go 40-17 to get to 93 wins.
Okay, well, that's just not going to happen.
That's a pretty good record.
No, that's just not going to happen. So I think that nobody was under the impression that was going to happen except for you. We are now joined on the Quiver River Electric guest line by Matt Pauley on the show now. Matt, how's it going?
It's going all right. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're fine. What's going on with this Cardinals team?
They're not scoring runs. That's the main thing right now. They pitched quite well against Cincinnati over the weekend, but they had the one game on Saturday where they had the 6-run inning and scored 7 total runs, but then they score 5 total runs over the other two games. So they're just not scoring runs right now.
And it seems to be happening against lesser opponents.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the Reds are whatever. The Angels are terrible. Arizona is a good team. I mean, that is a wild card contender. I think you can make a case for that. But it's not like they're playing the best competition. We were all worried about that stretch of games before the All-Star break against good teams. They did well there, but they are not doing well in these games against lesser opponents.
Yeah, and I would take that one step further because up until they scored in the 10th inning yesterday, they had not scored against the Cincinnati bullpen at all over the 3 games. All the runs up until that point had come against the starters that they were facing off against, and that's a terrible bullpen. That is just a terrible bullpen that Cincinnati has, and they had held the Cardinals scoreless until the 10th inning yesterday.
Well, so what do you think it means? Is it a stretch? Is it just, you know, is it the beginning of a collapse? What do you think's going on?
Yeah, it could be any of those things. And I'm not trying to not answer your question, but I leave the door open for any of that. Could this be the beginning of the end where they really fall off? If they don't win tonight, they're a 500 team. They're one game over 500 right now at 53-52. So, and this has been going on for a little while. I mean, they even you get rid of those two Braves series that they took 2 out of 3 before the All-Star break, and there were a lot of series losses in there as well. So I think it would be disingenuous for me not to leave open the possibility that this is kind of who they actually are, and this is going to continue on, and they're going to fall back, and they're going to be below 500. But do I also think that there is the possibility that they do find themselves a little bit, and they're just going through a slump right now that every team in baseball goes through over 162 games? Yeah, I leave open that possibility as well. And I'm sure a lot of people listening right now probably don't leave that possibility open quite as much. I think a lot of people think that this is just the beginning of the end. And maybe they're going to be right, maybe they're not. I don't know. I think it's impossible to just evaluate which of those two things are happening, but I think they're both very I don't think one is more probable than the other at this point.
And to this point, they have, and this could change if time goes on and things continue to deteriorate. It will change, but, you know, against teams that are 500 or better, that, you know, that they've played relatively well all season. I mean, they are I think they're a game above 500 over teams that are also at or over 500. So the good teams, at least so far, they've played well against, and they are right at 500 against the bad teams this year. So it's really kind of they might be a perfect example of a mediocre team.
Yeah. 100% they are. But mediocre teams make it in the playoffs.
They can. With the extra wild card. That's the thing.
Exactly. So, but in many ways, and I've said this before, unless they're playing the Brewers, who they just don't seem to match up well against, it almost doesn't seem like it matters who they play against. If they put their best effort on the field, and effort's the wrong word. If they put their best production, I'll go with that. If they are as productive as they can possibly be, they can beat just about anybody. But if they let that go at all, because the margin of error is, again, so thin, if they fall off that at all, seemingly they can, and right now they are losing to just about any team.
Yeah, so to sum it up, I feel like, is it correct to say at the beginning of the season the Cardinals were overperforming? Right now, 3-7 in their last 10, they're slightly underperforming, and it's probably going to balance out where they're a mediocre team that will most likely just miss the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement, Amy. I have a hard time arguing much with that. I think they're going to remain in playoff contention. I keep saying that they keep losing games, they keep falling backs, but right now they got to get out of it. They just have to get out of whatever's going on right now with them offensively.
Well, I think it's fair. I don't think you're contradicting yourself by saying they're still in it, because, like you mentioned, just the state of the Central as well as that mediocre teams can make the playoffs. I don't think you're talking out of both sides of your mouth with that.
Okay, and they're 1.5 games out of a wild card spot right now.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, if they keep playing baseball the way they have played since the All-Star break, they will fall out of it, and they will not be. They won't be in contention. Like they do to for me to be correct that I think they at least stay in contention for a playoff spot, they do have to play better baseball than what they've been playing recently.
What do you make of Matthew Liberatore's month so far? Because he had that 5-run game where they made him wear it. He gave up the runs early in the game against the Angels. Then he had to stay out there into the sixth. Prior to that, he had a 6-inning shutout. And before that, it was, 5 innings, 3 runs. So, going back to the end of July, the end of June, he had a pretty good start at the end of June. So what do you make of what he's done? And all of this has happened after we were talking about the possibility of them just taking him out of the rotation because he was struggling really badly.
Yeah, and I still don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to keep with him in the rotation. I think so. He, up until his last start, he had gone on a 3-game run where he had given up 5 total runs over those 3 games, and that covered 16 innings. If that and there was 2 really good starts in there, and then there was 1 not so good start in there. He had a start against the Cubs where he gave up 4 runs in 5 innings. So not terrible, but certainly not good. If that's going to be who Matthew Liberatore is, that 3-game run where he's over every 3 games, he's maybe got 2 pretty good starts and 1, and he's given up 5 total runs over 3 games, you can take that. So then he goes and has his last performance against the Angels, and like you mentioned, 5 1/3 innings, gives up 5 runs on 9 hits, but he gives up every single one of those runs in the single inning. So the big inning comes back to get him. And that seems to be a problem for him. After the game, Oliver Marmol said that first inning, everything was off. He wasn't synced up. His body wasn't, mechanically he was wrong. Pitch shape, spin, like everything was wrong with Matthew Liberatore in that first inning. And then he was able to lock in after that. That was also the first time he had pitched in 10 days. He went from July 11th to July 21st. So I think what you're trying to figure out there, and we'll see what it looks like moving forward for Liberatore, but I think, to be fair, you do have to leave open the possibility that after not pitching for a week and a half and he comes out and has a bad first inning, that it was all mechanical, and actually what Liberatore had done over the previous 3 games was totally legitimate, and every single pitcher at some point in time kind of goes through that where mechanics are just wacky and it looks bad. But at the same time, all season long, Liberatore has had problems with the big inning. So you also have to leave open the possibility that what we saw in the last start was just a continuation of who he's been all season long, and it wasn't connected to the week and a half off, and it wasn't a fluky type thing that that's who he is, and it's just a continuation. So I am kind of talking out both sides of my mouth right now, but I think this is how you have to evaluate things, because I don't totally know what the answer is on that last start, if that first inning, again, was a continuation or if it was something that was a little bit different. That's why his next start, I think, means so much, because maybe that starts to tell the story a little bit more.
So the Cardinals have had a couple of minor transactions. They put Joel Pozo on waivers. He got claimed by Baltimore. Scott Blewett is now with the A's. They did a deal with the A's for some cash. So it's not like nothing significant has happened, but the trade deadline is a week from today. So how you feeling now?
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to go by in any type of major way right now. And I think that they're going to try to maximize some return on some guys if they can. I don't think it's just going to be a straight 100% sell-off, but I think it's going to be closer to that than the other. Could something change between now and August 3rd? Sure. But I don't think this team has shown anything here lately. I would like to see, I would maybe like to see them go get some relief help just to help them stay afloat and survive the rest of the way, because that bullpen right now is really, really struggling and having a hard time holding leads and giving multiple innings and all that sort of stuff. So, I think it's going to be closer to a nothing burger than anything else, but I would expect that the Cardinals do maybe move some guys and get some more pieces for the future.
Yeah, I think any additions this is definitely not the team to go out of your way to bolster it for a playoff run. It just isn't. And the thing is, you don't really have to worry about the fan base's reaction. It's not like Cardinals fans are going to go, how did you not go out there and do something? They're not. They're just, I think they fully understand what this team is. And even if they get to September and they're still in the picture, like I think you and I are both kind of in line on that, I think they could still be in that playoff conversation late into the season. Even then, if you revise history, look back and go, they should have done something in the deadline, no one's going to say that. Nobody's going to say, look at them, they're a half game out of a wild card. They should have picked somebody up at the deadline. I don't think you're going to hear any Cardinals fans say that.
You'll hear it a little bit. The no one, I think I disagree with you.
You know what I mean. Because, you know what I mean, buddy.
But I mean, I hear it. I do the post game show.
There's always one guy.
I wouldn't call it even a vocal minority, but there are a group of people out there that truly believe right now that this team needs to do everything in their power to make it into the postseason.
Let me talk to them.
No matter what. And because they take this approach that, well, you know, once you get in, anything can happen. Mm-mm. And I push back on that. I think you build this organization as a way to try to get a roster that looks like a legit World Series roster as soon as possible. That doesn't mean you're not trying to get to the playoffs this year. That means you do nothing. You do absolutely nothing that could mortgage the future at all. You don't trade a single guy who could maybe be an important part of this team moving forward. And, Ronz, there are people out there that still do not want to hear that.
Yeah, well, there are some people you just can't take seriously ever. Hey, there's a, you know something, I believe this, there is the Cardinals team that won 83 games and won a World Series, it's one of the best things to ever happen to them and one of the worst simultaneously, because winning 83 games, going on to a World Series title, empowers people to believe that, hey, look at this, this can happen, while completely forgetting that team was awesome. That was a really damn good roster that got healthy at the right time. That was not some bum-ass roster that they dragged all the way to the championship. That's not what that was.
No, it's not. Go look at the. You make a great point. Go look at that roster and go look at the guys that were getting healthy. And I think they always believed that they could go on a run. Same thing with the Blues and the Stanley Cup run. I hear it every year from people. If it's not going well, well, think about the Stanley Cup year and the run they went on. Like, that's a hope is not a strategy. And looking back at those teams and what they did, it's all about being hopeful.
Matt, I just have to say though, for 99% of my life, hope is my only strategy. That's all I got.
That's all you have. Yeah. That's okay.
All right.
Hope is good. So
you could be the outlier, Amy. Hope can be your strategy.
It's all I have. Don't take it from me, Matt.
Matt Pauly has Redbird Rush Hour at 5 o'clock, pregame show at 5:50, and then 6:45, Cardinals Cubs at Busch Stadium. Goodbye, Matt.
Goodbye.
Yo, Pauly, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
I'm serious about that 83 win team.
Yeah, that's
it's
really
almost,
good point.
It's almost like I'm obviously you'll take a World Series anytime, but also it instilled this false belief that you can be a totally mediocre team. That was not an 83 win team on paper. It just wasn't. That was a very, very good team. They got healthy and they won. It's not like this team with a couple of good players on it, winning a whole thing.
Listen, hope is, I go into every race going, you know what? Maybe a very mediocre person can go to the Olympics.
Oh, no. We have a Cracker Barrel update?
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out what this is next on KMOX.
All right, Ronj. We've got news. Cracker Barrel news. It's a Cracker Barrel beat.
Okay.
The CEO of Cracker Barrel, Julie Masino. You remember her. She was the CEO when last summer she introduced a simplified new logo for the barrel and remodeled a bunch of stores, removing the traditional nostalgic items and look. Well, Julie Masino is stepping down after her tenure that was very controversial in the barrel world. She'll be stepping down in October. She's going to help with the transition. And David Dino, he's the CEO of Bloomin' Brands, which is the
Outback.
Owner of Outback Steakhouse. He will be taking over in August of 2026.
So it is now in hindsight. I mean, it was at the time, too. Pretty insane that there was such a reaction to them just trying to renovate. Like, there's modernizing the logo, and they wanted to redo the inside of the restaurant, and people took it as an assault.
It was
on
a culture
them.
War.
How sensitive do you have to be to look at a Cracker Barrel being renovated? Like, oh, let's just do a new color scheme. And oh, let's just do a new logo, like a lot of companies do, and say, oh, that's a personal attack against you and your politics.
I felt attacked.
You have to be literally crazy.
I felt attacked.
Then you're literally crazy.
Matt, was your home barrel renovated?
No, mine walked away unscathed. Thank goodness. God bless America.
And you're still not going back there.
Why are you hoarse over there?
I don't know.
He's eating.
I'm eating grapes.
Speaking of lunacy, in Washington, D.C., there's a lot of that. And we're going to talk to Andrew Egger, White House correspondent for The Bulwark. That is next on 104.1 FM KMOX.